So let's see if Dustin disconnects himself. That's
the reality. That could be, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, no pressure, no pressure.
Yeah.
Just, you know, don't touch anything.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Wow. Dustin's actually. Can you still hear me? Yes. And you sound great.
Yes. Great.
You've actually managed to successfully adjust your setup without destroying everything.
Although I like this new setup because your microphone is perfectly centered and in focus and covers up most of your face.
That's the way it should be.
Dustin, what are you humming?
Oh, the I think the Price is Right theme song. Da, na, 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 na.
Yeah, that tracks. Well, with that, welcome to Pajiba, the Pajiba television podcast. I'm Pajiba comedy editor Dan Hamamura. With me, as always, are the managing editor Tori Preston.
Hello.
Hello. And National Lampoon's treasure, Dustin Rolls.
Where's trying to come somehow combine National Lampoon and
National treasure.
It just didn't work for me.
Dustin, why did you have a cat on your shoulder briefly?
My child was trolling me.
Hmm. Why did the cat leave so quickly?
Because the cat didn't want to be on my shoulder anymore because it's the cat.
That's true.
And I the know some cats that be on like, my shoulder. They like sitting up there.
Yeah, the kitten loved it. Now the cats don't really want to hang out with me anymore.
I heard if you wear hoodies, they have enough to like dig their claws into and they'll kind of... Yeah.
That makes sense.
I can't get my cat to sit on my shoulder.
Sometimes they don't care if you have enough cloth for them to dig into. Even if it's just skin, they'll just be like, no, I'm just going to hang on.
Yeah, that's very true.
Is there a cat in your new situation, Dan?
There's also a cat.
Wow.
Also a cat.
There are two cats. One is weird and demands attention. Will probably walk across the screen at some point. The other one's more just chill and hangs out.
Yeah. This is exciting. I'm very excited.
Anyway. That's neither here nor there. We are a television podcast, not a Dan's Life podcast.
We could be.
Could be. I would love that podcast.
It's the end of the year. It's the holidays. Why don't we get personal with Dan Hamamura?
There's really not a lot to tell, you know? I mean, I sometimes I have to go away for work that is not spy related, and I've never seen the show Kung Fu, and that's pretty much
it. Honestly, about to live with two cats.
If Dan told the podcast any more than that, I would probably cry. Because that meant that he told the world
before us.
Yeah. Not before you.
No.
With us.
Yeah.
Right.
Dan is more mysterious than any of us anticipated when we got into this podcast over 4 years ago.
No one needs to know what's going on in people's personal lives, you know? So.
Friendship is overrated.
It's not about friendship. It's just about the point is that the podcast is business time. Business time is about TV.
and we are business people.
We are very serious. This is a serious podcast. This is practically journal. I'm not a journalist.
Practically journalism.
I feel like it's basically journalism is what's happening here. With all of the ethical requirements of keeping your own personal things out of it.
Unless they're wood or water related.
Those are important topics that are just being reported upon by the podcast.
I will say, right now, the caffeinated water is on sale. So probably a Christmas thing.
Where?
Like at Hannaford. So I've been stocking up on the caffeinated water. It's
which,
good.
Which kind?
Aha.
Orange,
the orange and green tea.
Sounds good. So are you just drinking that tonight, or are you?
No, I also have beers, my Oxbow and Allagash, along with the caffeinated water.
Yeah. How many beer do you have? Beers?
Three.
Or do you think you're going to end with three, or do you think you'll?
Usually I do three.
Dustin's
gesticulating.
Yeah.
To my off kid.
Screen to. Oh, yes. Okay.
Is he threatening you with another kitten?
No, no. He's trying to find his meds.
Oh.
As Dustin takes a swig of his meds.
Aha. That's right. last week, Polar was 3 for $10, and I really should have gone back three times and just loaded up on it.
Three boxes? Back,
yeah, yeah. No, no, yeah. 3 12-pack for $10. Yeah. And now it's $5.20 again.
I read some article. There was some study. There are weird chemicals in seltzer.
What?
And Polar has one of the highest concentrations of it. It's still all of them are still less than what's supposed to be government regulated allowed. What are the, hold on.
There's stuff in everything.
There's stuff in everything. Yeah. I know. There's also something about dark chocolate having a bunch of lead in it or something.
Oh, right.
That's just weird.
Yeah.
I saw a headline.
So everything is trying to kill you basically. Yeah, forever chemicals. What are they? PFAS chemicals.
Oh, the PFAS. That's you don't want that in your seltzer.
So, yeah, apparently Polar has more of it than other brands, but still not as much, not to the level where it's supposed to be bad, but also all of it's bad. So how are they determining?
I don't know.
Why Polar? Why my brand?
I know. It's the best. it's the PFAS that make it taste good.
Probably. Oh, it's, yeah. What if that's the key? Damn it. Anyway.
When you make it at home, there's no PFAS, which is why it sucks.
Yeah.
Are you drinking Polar, Tori?
I am. So what I'm not drinking alcohol, but I made myself a holiday cocktail I had one can left of the Polar, the orange lemonade or whatever, orange limeade, whatever that one is. Then I had bought at Trader Joe's, and I need to stop doing this because every time they come out with a new, it's not a soda and not a seltzer. They just brand it as a beverage and it's in a can and they always have interesting fruit flavors. So this one was a cranberry ginger beverage.
Oh.
And I was that could be promising because the elderberry one I had the other week was crap. This one is better, but also still kind of crap. So I was all right, well, let me mix it with some seltzer. And then I added a little bit of the Trader Joe's, their tangerine juice, and tried to make like a punch out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fine. Would be better if it didn't have the cranberry ginger crap in it, but you know.
That reminds me of the when we were a kid, they had at the cafeteria, they would have milk, chocolate milk, and orange drink.
Yeah, drink, right? Guess,
right, and they couldn't call it juice.
No.
So it was just orange drink.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never a good idea. Yeah, why did they? Anyway, so I do not recommend the beverages.
No.
But I will probably continue to try them.
Also, the Trader Joe's seltzer sucks.
It's just not as good. Probably because it doesn't have as many PFAS.
Right.
In them.
Probably but fewer plastics.
But it's really sweet too, and too much flavor.
I don't have a problem with too much flavor.
No, when you get the orange, Polar is a hint of orange, but if you get the Trader Joe's seltzer, it's just orange.
I don't mind. I don't like it as well. But it's also the kind of thing where I feel like you develop an acquired taste. Once you've had something enough, you get used to that being the one. Because I remember when I started buying the Trader Joe's Sriracha, because I put Sriracha on everything. It's like my ketchup because I'm an adult. And I was always used to the proper like rooster sauce, and the Trader Joe's one tastes a little weird. It's like not the same, but then it was just, I was always shopping at Trader Joe's. So I would just keep buying their sriracha because it was better than nothing. And now I am used to that sriracha, and the normal rooster sauce tastes weird. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you just committed to Trader Joe's seltzer, it would probably win you over.
After a while, sure.
After a while. You will adapt. But not to their beverages. Because they're trash.
Yes. All right.
What are you doing, Dan?
I have nothing to add to Water Talk tonight. I am drinking more Offerman Edition Lagavulin. It's very good. I'm going to have to really start to savor this bottle because it could go real quick.
Where'd you get the Lagavulin, Dan?
I got it as a gift from my manager. My manager.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Your handler.
No, that's first of all, not a handler. And also second, not a CA. Look, anyway, the point is that I am it's good. It's good whiskey, and that is
that's all that matters.
I'm not in the CIA.
Okay.
anyway,
I'll say.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of TV to talk about tonight, probably too much. We've got many shows on our list. We're also definitely not recording another holiday bonus episode after this, so don't worry about that.
We would not want to give them the illusion that everything is not recorded in the same week that it comes out.
Right. Briefly, I had I wanted to just share a quick update because last week Dustin spoke about The White Lotus, and I finally took the plunge and watched season 2 of The White Lotus, which is very easy. I mean, it's enjoyable, and you can clearly, roll into it now that they're all
and
out.
It's only 7 episodes.
And it's only 7 episodes. And so I just wanted to say, I watched it and it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
A rousing, I think
without statement. Like if I had watched it, detached from the sort of like juggernaut online that it had become, I might've thought it was just fine too, but it was that it really is sort of like a communal experience kind of thing. There's so few of those shows. You just sort of have to enjoy it for not only the show itself, but for the conversation and the other stuff that it provokes.
Yeah,
I guess so. I don't know. It was fine.
Okay.
Will you watch season 3?
Oh, I'm definitely going to watch season 3.
I bet.
I have different reasons to watch season 3, but I will definitely be watching.
Harper and. No, Ethan and Daphne did something.
I don't
on
know
the
any
island.
Character names. Oh, okay. I do know who you're talking about there. Yeah. I don't know, and it doesn't matter.
People really thought that it mattered.
It doesn't matter because either way, he came back from that trip being, being changed and being willing to accept.
You don't think it mattered if sleeping with somebody is somebody who wasn't his wife is what changed him for the better?
No, because they've all bought into the fantasy life that they're living now.
And it didn't matter if adultery is how he got there.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter from our perspective. I'm saying it doesn't matter to them.
Oh, I see. But it mattered so much before that moment.
Right.
So much.
Right, because he's, I don't know, weird and doesn't believe his wife for whatever reason.
Did she do anything?
That's a good question. I don't think she did.
We don't know, and also kind of doesn't.
So it's basically you have two characters who maybe cheated on each other and chose to be together, or two characters who might not have cheated on each other, but ultimately don't actually believe that they didn't cheat on each other and still decided to stay together, believing the worst about each other.
Well, you have two characters who were in a bad place relationship-wise coming into it, may or may not have cheated on each other, and decided that the fact that they can accept that they don't know kind of, like, helps bring them together.
Okay.
And, like, kind of repairs their relationship for, you know, even if it means that they're kind of accepting lies or that they're ignoring things that they don't actually know the answer to.
Right.
One other quick question, because I didn't have anybody to talk about this with. I didn't realize until after the show had ended that people did not like Haley Lou Richardson's character, who I thought was maybe one of my favorite, my top three favorite characters, at least in the season. Did you like that character?
She was fine.
She was fine.
I don't know why people not like her. I don't know why people wouldn't like her.
Because she made a lot of dumb decisions, and because she wore clothes. Well, yeah,
she's kind of a dumb character. A lot of characters are dumb characters.
Yeah, sometimes for just purely like plot reasons. But I think people didn't like her outfits. I thought they made fun of her clothes, but I thought that was kind of like sort of endearing. I didn't think people hated her because she dressed weird.
The dressing weird, in addition to like disliking her for other things, just was like an additional reason to dislike her. Huh. I read a Jezebel piece.
Okay. I do have to say that I am completely disconnected from the discourse surrounding the show because I ignored it because I hadn't seen the show until now. So, and I'm not going to go back and read all
that. There was an immense amount of discourse surrounding theories and who was going to die in the end. And it turned out really didn't matter that much. It was not the point of the show.
Yeah.
But
it also wasn't the point of season one.
Right.
No, I know.
But
still fun speculating. And no one expected the person who actually died to die.
Right.
Which was dumb, but also fun.
Yeah. I don't know. It was fine.
All right.
Maybe if season three takes place in Asia, maybe hire an Asian writer. At least one. Maybe.
Doesn't hire any writers, does he?
No, he does not.
I see. Maybe a consultant of some sort.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, The White Lotus. It was fine. I will watch season three. For reasons. All right. Dustin said he had 30 seconds on Sex Lives of College Girls.
20 seconds.
20 seconds.
Oh, 20 seconds.
All right. Hold on. Let me get the timer.
Yeah.
No, it's not even going to take me that long. I just.
Hold on. I haven't said it yet.
All right.
Damn it. Oh, I can't even do that. Oh, yes, I can. Hold on. All right. 20 seconds. Start.
It's a Mindy Kaling comedy, wrapped up its second season this week. Fantastic show, but I don't feel comfortable talking about it because it's about college girls.
And you did it in 12 seconds.
There you go.
I'm really glad you brought us that stunning dispatch.
You really should watch it, though.
So it's your, yeah. All right. I don't know. It's I stopped in season one.
It's like sort of an innocent kind of Euphoria type. No, it's not anything like Euphoria, but like it's got a lot of mature themes, but it's a comedy. It's Mindy Kaling.
Yeah.
And that is all. Dan.
Yes.
Can I ask you, did you think the person who won Survivor deserved to win Survivor?
Oh,
we can also spoil it unless, right?
I think it's okay to spoil it because Tori doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. And, I won't remember if I do watch it.
No. I think of the three people in the finale or the three people who were at Final Tribal.
Right.
I actually think Cass was the best. I think Cass actually had the stronger game overall.
Same, yeah.
I think Gabler clearly made his case. Like, but it wasn't strong enough that she had to make her case, and she for whatever she reason didn't. Gabler was able to pull it off.
But it's so interesting. Oh yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I think the fact that he, first of all, I was so heartbroken when Jesse didn't win.
Yes.
Because
devastating.
He played such a good game and was clearly like, if he got in the final, he was winning. Like yes. he could just sit there and not say anything and he would have won. But the fact that Gabler beat him in fire with a record time probably bolstered his case a lot. And the fact that, like, I mean, the thing that was interesting about the one thing that really convinced me that he deserved it out of the three between him and Owen was always going to be third place. So that's fine. But between him and Cass was that he was able to frame basically kind of being a little bit of a loose cannon and a little bit, to kind of like jumping between groups as saying like, I've been on everyone's side. Like I'm on everyone's good side. Like he was able to reframe it that way rather than it seeming like, well, yeah, but that's the thing is that like, he was able to convince them that was the case. Also clearly liked Gabler a lot. And like, that's the kind of thing that like,
to me.
But I think that's the kind of thing that we don't get on TV, which is that for whatever reason, they all really just like him personally.
So, but around the merge, they hated him. At least the edits mm-hmm. suggested that he was loathed.
Right.
And that shit that he pulled off of the merge and like outing the Karen nurse. And he was just – I thought of Gabler the same way I think a lot of people thought of Owen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean they were kind of like – I thought both of them are who you would want to take to the end because neither one would win.
Right. That was clear. That was definitely clear with Owen. But yeah, I think fundamentally, like, again, who knows what was said over the entire tribal, but like based on what we were shown, Gabler clearly made a better case than Cass.
Yes, he did.
And I think that if she had been able to make a better case, she would have won. And I think that she actually had, I think she started off tribal being ahead, but he won them over.
Yeah, it's what was interesting is like at no point in this game did someone say, we got to get rid of Gabler. He's a threat. Even right. in the end, they didn't think he was a threat.
Right.
There was no like scheming to see who should we get rid of. Gabler was never on anyone's list.
Right. I mean, there were times where they were considering getting him out because they thought he was just too
annoying.
Well, I don't know if it was annoying, but they definitely said he was too hard to like he was too erratic. Like they right. couldn't, they didn't know what he was doing. Like they couldn't count on him to do something predictable. But it worked out for him. I mean, the other thing that was really kind of a bummer watching this again, I enjoyed the season overall, but like it, I know it's a function of Survivor and the way the game works, but seeing that the last three people out were Jesse, Carla, and Cody. And all three of them. Like the three of them, any of them would have won over any of these three. What's her name? Noelle would have won over any of these three.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's what happens, right? Is that if you're too strong and you're exposed, then you
always rewards mediocrity in the show.
Right.
I didn't see it until Friday and I had been spoiled to the fact that the winner, I didn't know who the winner was, but the winner had donated all the money to veterans and that mm-hmm. kind of gave it away. Mm-hmm. And then the whole show, I'm thinking, oh my God, the only way that Gabler wins is if he tells everyone that he's going to give away the $1 million to veterans. And that turned out not to be true, thankfully.
Right.
And so after it was announced that he'd won, he did give away all the money, which was like a really, really great gesture. To like veterans with mental difficulties, mm-hmm. with suffering from PTSD. So good for him.
Yeah, but it,
it is a better story than Cassidy.
Yeah, and it is a bummer that I think, I don't know. It was just like going back to because Jesse was my favorite, and like I really wanted him to win.
Wow.
But also the fact that like when they go to fire, like you look at his body language and you know he knows he's going to lose. Like he looked so defeated before the competition started. And he was right.
And all the people that like beat Jesse felt terrible about it. Because mm-hmm. everyone thought that, even the people that beat him thought he should have won. Mm-hmm. Like, as a social game, he's like one of the best that's ever played.
So here's a question, because I thought I was curious about this. I mean, like, it's an unfair standard, but because it's been done in a previous season of Survivor, should Cass have gone to fire herself?
No, I think
that's like, you think that would have saved her if she beat Jesse and fire herself?
I get, well, in this case, because of how it worked out, maybe. But, you know, you win that final immunity. That is like your reward, that right. you don't have to go to fire. You should right. be able to collect that reward.
Right.
And I understand, like, what that one guy from a few seasons ago did fire himself.
Yeah.
I think if you do it, the first time you do it, the first guy who does it is like a hero. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just like, that's dumb. Why would yeah. you do that?
Yeah. I mean, there's no, I kind of agree. I don't think it would have made, I think it only makes a difference after the fact because, again, I think because Gabler won in like record time,
right?
That it made everyone think like, "Oh my God, this is crazy." But anyway, Tori's been very patiently waiting us out until we finish talking about Survivor. But don't worry, Dustin. Next season's coming soon enough, probably in March. And I don't know. They made it seem very dramatic, like that there's like a medevac situation.
Oh, yeah, they did. They look like two potential injuries. Mm-hmm. Like the gay dad, who already looks like the best character of the season, falling off a rock.
Oof. So, anyway, that was Survivor.
Indeed it was.
But there'll be more. What's it going to be, 44?
44, and then 45, I assume, will be some sort of all-star edition.
Mm-hmm. When do they start the next season? Like, what? I always forget what the break is between seasons. It just feels like it's always on.
It's early March. It's usually, yeah, sometime in either February or March. Wow. But they film two back-to-back normally.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
All right. Oh. Do you want to talk about 1923?
Seems yes. like you want to talk about 1923.
Oh my God, I loved. Well, 1923 is not a show that you love, but it's a really good show.
What does that mean?
It's hard to love because it's you know, it's like they call Walking Dead misery porn, and I think all of the Yellowstone shows are, but particularly the prequels are like just complete horrifying misery porn. But it's like the era. It's basically showing you. Trying to illustrate to you what it's like to live in that particular era. Going across the 1890 or 1883 was going across the Oregon Trail. And this is what it's showing you and how that experience is. And it felt, oh God, horrible. And everyone died. And then now it's like 1923 in Montana. There are locusts, there are droughts. And it's just getting started, and I expect that there will be probably a number of deaths. But basically what has happened is Harrison Ford's character is overseeing a farm, the Yellowstone Ranch, what Kevin caught his great-great-great nephew will one day take over. And there's like rain, he's trying to save off a range war. Between the sheep people and the cattle people, because there's only so much grass and he has it all on his property in the mountains because it wasn't affected by whatever the drought.
So he's the only one with grass?
Kind of. It looks like that. Yeah.
What is his livestock?
He's got cattle.
Okay.
And he agrees to, like, with all the other landowners, is like, okay, we'll let all the cattle owners like bring their cattle up to the mountains. Somebody's going to have to sit with them because they're bears up there.
Right.
And then they get up there and the sheep guy, who's Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
The sheep guy's already up there with his sheep eating the grass. So some shit's about to go down. So you got that, but then you got the two sons, who one of whom will take over the ranch. And we are told early on that one of both will die. So we don't know which one. One is on like in Africa killing leopards and lions. He's not like a big game hunter, but he's like protecting, I think, tourists and like maybe even locals from these animals. Like at one point, he's with a bunch of tourists and the leopard like attacks a woman and like drags her up into a tree and then throws her corpse off. And you're like, oh shit.
And they show him in Africa?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
So yeah, and we don't know what he's doing out there. He's just suffering from PTSD from World War I. And we'll see if he dies or if the other son, who is a rancher, dies. And his wife is pregnant. And he's supposed to get married, but he has to help these cattle go up on the mountains. So he had to postpone his wedding. And his wife is pregnant, and there's going to be like a scuffle or a fight, or there'll be guns involved, and we don't know if he's going to die or not. So by the end of the season, we understand that the ranch will be on the precipice of like a disaster, and one of the sons will be dead. And I can't wait. Harrison Ford is so good. He's just like Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And then Helen Mirren is like Helen Mirren, except Irish.
Huh.
They are really well suited to Taylor Sheridan's sort of language.
She plays his wife.
Yes. Okay. And you don't have to have seen the other shows to watch it. If you just want to watch a Harrison Ford show, he's on TV, people. Han fucking Solo is on television.
How many episodes is it? Because it's a limited series.
Yeah, yeah. The first, 1883, was 8, so I assume this one will be 2.
Roughly that, yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Also, Tulsa King is really good. Just for the record.
Oh, actually, that reminds me. I wanted to ask, is Tulsa King officially in the same universe?
I don't think so. It's not okay.
They haven't been linked, put it that way.
No, right.
Yeah. Okay.
Sylvester Stallone goes to Montana.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe cool. Funny.
So where does this, obviously it just started, but do you have a sense yet of like where you think this will land within like which one you enjoy more or less or?
Well, see, the thing about the prequels is that you don't enjoy them so much as you sort of endure them. But they're still really good, and that's hard to – but they really are hard to watch. Like the Isabel May, she played the daughter in the first one who dies in the end, and she narrated the first prequel, and she narrates this one. And as soon as you hear her voice, you're just like, oh, God.
She's dead. Just like, how is she narrating?
She died before the first one happened.
Yeah, she's narrating from beyond.
Yeah, well, she narrated from beyond in the first one, too, because it was all flashback. She's just the voice. But when you hear it, you're just like, oh, God, somebody's about to die. Like dysentery or snake bite or some horrifying infection. Because, like, most of these deaths are not like people getting shot or something. They're just like
leopard mauling.
Right. The way people died back then was this is how they died.
Right.
There were no antibiotics or whatever, and you just got a toothache and died 7 days later.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And yet it's really entertaining and I can't explain how. The characters are just really well drawn and it's sort of like The Walking Dead where you're like, who is going to live and who is going to die? So you're rooting for certain characters to survive and because you know a lot of people. Like Harrison Ford's going to die. I know it. He's old, of course.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Hmm. Indeed.
So who survived the last show?
Nobody, I thought.
Someone had to survive, right? To keep the line going.
one son who was like 8 years old in that show, or maybe even younger, maybe 6 or 7. And then they had another son after the events of that show.
But I thought they died.
Oh, so the parents survived.
No. Yeah. In this show, one of the two sons will die, but we don't know which one. The daughter died in the prequel.
Did the parents in the prequel die?
They died in between
seasons. Oh, in between. Okay, so didn't die during the... Okay, that's right. What confused me, because I'm like, how did they have another kid?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Dustin, you say everyone dies, and that's a...
I know, yeah.
It's different.
But also, a lot of people die of old age.
But back then, old age wouldn't have been that old.
I know. But also, Harrison Ford is like 100, so...
In the show... In real life, he's only in his 80s.
I know, but still, he's in his 80s.
Oh, he's doing Indiana Jones.
I know. He must have so many stunt doubles.
I hope he does. He's a treasure.
He is.
Is he a national treasure, Tori?
I mean, he is. Wow, in my book. Good, in Dan. My
that
book.
That's good.
That's my one good transition for the year.
All right.
Just in time.
should we do it?
Sure.
National Treasure just premiered on Disney Plus. It's a spin-off-y, sequel-y adaptation of the very obviously popular Nicolas Cage series of films that are inspired by Indiana Jones and kind of like the Da Vinci Code crap. So the show... It takes place in the same universe. Harvey Keitel's FBI agent character from the movies kind of shows up in the first episode to bridge the gap and kick things off. But there's like kind of a new cast of characters that have no ties to Nicolas Cage's character. And so they're kind of embark on a new treasure hunt. Only this one's kind of interesting because it's... They're looking for Montezuma's treasure, which was hidden from Cortez and the conquistadors. But it's really sort of, it seems like it's marking a combination, like a collaboration, a cooperation between the Aztecs, the Incas, and the Mayas, Mayans. And it's like they kind of work together to keep things from the conquistadors, the people who are coming in and there were like these three treasure boxes. One was given to each group of people. And then there was this kind of underground group of women who was tasked with like hiding it and keeping the secret. And somewhere along the line, as usual in the movies, the Freemasons got whiff of it. And so you kind of have the same dynamic where... Always the Freemasons. Hmm. Well, and that's Harvey Keitel's character was an FBI agent who was also a Freemason.
Right.
So he was hiding one of the boxes in Baton Rouge. And the show starts off in Baton Rouge. And so your main character is this girl named Jess. She is a Mexican immigrant. She undocumented. She's kind of here on dreamer status through DACA. Her mother has just died. Her father died when she was a child. And what she finds out from the FBI agent is that her dad actually was probably, he wasn't just like a thief. He was a treasure hunter. He was part of the group that was trying to protect these boxes from the, you know, people who were actually looking to them, not for preservation, but for profit. Mm-hmm. So it kind of becomes her birthright, and she wants to unravel the mystery to get to know who her father actually was. And along the way, Catherine Zeta-Jones shows up as the requisite bad guy, and she's kind of wonderful. She's working for someone I don't think we've really identified yet, but has like limitless backing, and they're trying to find the boxes because the boxes can be opened up to form a map, which will lead to the treasure. So it's very like the parts of National Treasure are there. It's just that it's a much younger cast. It feels very Disney Channel-ish. You don't have as much action. It's more focused on the puzzle. More, you know, female characters, which is great. No Nick Cage, but there it might be Nick Cage.
He's really, really missing.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, if you're a fan of the movies and that's what you're looking for, like, you're not getting that. Mm-hmm. But
he makes it feel a little less kiddy.
Maybe a little bit, but it's also, I mean, they were family friendly movies that were very action oriented. This is much more of a kid's show. Mm. There's puzzles, but not as much action. And that you can tell, like, you know, in the movies, they were kind of zipping all over and, you know, big chases and stuff like that. And this is, like, so far in two episodes, they haven't left Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a showdown in the gift shop of a, you know, naval museum. Like, it's not exactly, you know, Mount Rushmore. Like,
right, right.
There was stuff that but on the other hand, I also think that it's I'm curious where the show's going, because what I like about it is that it's not so U.S.-centric. Like, I mean, it's still called National Treasure, but it's really kind of expanding the boundaries and what we consider – you know, the history of our, not our nation, but of this territory, and mm-hmm. kind of going, like, you know, America is more than the United States. It's more than the boundaries that people who, that, you know, colonists came and formed. It's like, there were a lot more people here. So, you know, I can't, like, I think that's a great angle to take on it and on the history. So I don't know. Yeah, it's I don't know if the show will be worthwhile. I know that the Justin Bartha character, Riley, like, he's going to show up for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. They're talking about if there's a season two, Nick Cage might actually be involved.
Mm.
And I'm not sure, because they're still working on a script for a third National Treasure movie. So I don't know if this becomes kind of like a backdoor setup for it, or if they'll all be, you know, involved, or maybe the show doesn't take off and kind of kills all of it. So, I don't know, but yeah, it's like, I appreciate what the show's doing. I think it is very much targeted for a younger audience, which makes sense. It's Disney Plus. It's essentially, right. It really feels like, you know, old school Disney Channel.
Mm-hmm. The only way I could be less interested in it is if it had a hobbit.
So you're not watching Willow.
I'm not.
I forgot to tell you, though, the other week, Hannah Waddingham had, like, a cameo in Willow.
That's not enough, but it's intriguing.
So what if I told you she was a lesbian woodcutter?
Oh, my God.
In, like, dungarees and an axe, and she's fighting. It was pretty great.
Can I, like, watch her scene on YouTube?
You 100% can. Yeah. It's in episode 3. You can definitely find her. But Disney I had this Plus? Moment of being like, yes, and then that was it.
Disney Plus is kind of like I mean, well, they had Andor, which wasn't a huge hit, but otherwise they're kind of sucking right now. Post She-Hulk. Well, post She-Hulk and post Andor, whatever.
This particular
cycle is not good.
Look, Loki season 2 will come back and I will be really into it, even though nobody else will be. And that's all I care about.
Fair.
And Mandalorian will be back next year.
That's true. And it'll be very touching. They're reunited.
I never finished the second season of Big Shot.
I never watched any of Big Shot.
Nor should you. It is also a kid show. But I watched it with my kids, and then they kind of lost interest too.
I mean, I think that's a challenge with Disney Plus, is like, the nice thing is they're willing to throw a lot of money at the programs. But on the other hand, they don't have the – it's really like there are a couple things that feel like they're not even – you know, they're – that adults will enjoy. Andor is definitely an adult show.
Right.
A lot of shows are more like kind of all ages ish, maybe skewing older. Maybe you wouldn't let little kids watch She-Hulk, but like teen, you know, a lot of ages can watch those.
Right.
But then there's a lot of kids programming, because it's also, you know, it's Disney Channel.
Right.
But with kids. But
so you don't get, you know, like, it's not like Hulu or Netflix where there's just like a lot of stuff I feel like I can watch.
Right, right, right.
But with kids, all you have to do is like put the whole Pixar catalog on there and they'll just rewatch those movies over and over.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is appeal to the adult. So I think this National Treasure idea was a terrible one.
So,
and I blame it on Bob Chapek instead of, and that's why Iger's coming aboard because yeah. of this failure.
But do you think he's going to, is he going to actually clean that up or is he going to make the boundaries and programming even more rigid?
Oh, I have no idea.
So can I actually segue into Kinect?
Yes.
So, yeah. So here's the thing. So Kinect is a Disney, it was a Disney Plus show. It's, I'm watching it on Hulu because it's one of those shows that I think it got put on Hulu. I actually don't know if I went, if I opened up Disney Plus, if I could find it there, but supposedly like they're the ones who produced it or acquired it. But Kinect is a South Korean horror show directed by the one of the best, most prolific Japanese directors, largely horror directors, Takashi Miike. And so it's really wild to like read about the show and then be like, you know, Disney Plus, like what? But there have been times, you know, yeah. Anyway,
it is not available on Disney Plus. Just
it is
just
not yet.
For it. No,
but it is on Hulu.
Yeah.
And the show is 6 episodes. It's based on a web comic or webtoon. It kind of takes a pretty familiar premise. The idea of, you know, if, and we've seen this in different movies where somebody has a heart transplant and then has a connection to whoever, you know, to the dead person, or gets an eye transplant and then can see what the dead person, whatever. So it kind of takes that premise of being connected to whoever you got your organs from and puts a really kind of weird, complicated spin on it, where a guy in the beginning of the first episode gets kidnapped by organ harvesters and he's murdered for his organs. They take his eyes, they start cutting into his rib cage, everything. And then while the surgeon is going to look for something, his body just starts knitting itself back together.
Oh, nice.
And he stands up and finds his eyes, puts one of them in, and then the surgeon comes back in and he doesn't get a chance to grab his second eye before he jumps out of a window and escapes. So these organ harvesters are like, okay, well, at least we got one eye, and apparently just like put it in somebody. And so this guy wants his eye back, and he can see through the eye when sometimes like there's a song that he wrote that was online that other people have started playing. And whenever the song comes on, it kind of, if the person, the person who got the eye hears it, it connects them. But the twist is the guy who got the eye happens to be a serial killer who has been making art. he doesn't just kill people. He displays them in pop-up art exhibits around the city where he like makes them into statues covered in resin. So the cops are looking for the serial killer, but they also, for some reason, there's this guy with an eye patch who keeps showing up. So they're also looking for him. And they think it might all be connected, but they don't know why. And it's like, well, because dude with the eye patch is the only witness to the killer. So he's looking for the killer kind of to stop the murders, but mostly because he just wants his eye back. Because if he gets the eye, it'll go right back into his body, because there's all this really cool special effects where the tendrils come out and knit him back together every time he loses. So there's also a bunch of fight scenes where somebody comes along and cuts his arm off and it gets back, you know, attached. And that's called Kinect. So there's another mystery going on where they start kind of explaining why he is special. But for the first few episodes, it's like, it's just unexplained. Like, yeah, he can do this and he wants his eye back. And the organ harvesters have figured out that this guy, his organs would be a lot of, worth a lot of money if they just heal.
Right.
So they're looking for him. They've also realized that, well, if we can't find him, we sold that one eye of his for too cheap a price. So we should go and get that guy. So they're now, so the cops and the organ harvesters are both looking for the main character and looking for the killer to the organ harvesters. They want their eye back so they can sell it for a higher price.
Right.
And it's just this merry-go-round of these characters all trying to find more out about each other and escaping and, you know, intersecting in different ways.
It sounds like the kind of show that only works in South Korea and would be amazing. But if like an American tried to remake it, it would be terrible.
Yes.
But like, yeah, you mention these shows all the time. They sound like bonkers. And then I watch them and they're amazing. But also like
this one would not
work in any other context.
This has very serious Dr. Brain vibes.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of, but it's also, and I think that's why it's so interesting, because it's the first, it's apparently the first like Korean show that's been handled by a Japanese director. And I don't know why Takashi Miike did it. Like, it's just like, did you just want a challenge? Like, I don't know if he has an extensive career in television, but he directs, like there are years where he puts out like 3 movies a year.
Right.
Like, it's not like he's ever hurting for work.
Yeah. And he does both like really like kind of like cheap, fast movies. Yeah. And he's done like fairly, at least for Japan, fairly big budget, like IP stuff or like adaptations or.
Right. And he's done like manga adaptations and like, you know, like it's not always horror. It's like kind of a whole gamut of all genres, all whatever, you know.
Right. What's so interesting, because there's also, I had not heard of this show until you told me about it. And also, I'm obviously going to watch it, not just because I love Takashi Miike's work, but also it sounds like delightfully insane, and I kind of want to see it. But there's another, obviously we're not a movie podcast, but there is a Hirokazu Koreeda, who's like one of the preeminent Japanese directors right now, or one of the other ones. And he just filmed, well, not just, but like his movie that's coming out, I think it's already out in Japan and Korea, and it's coming out here next year. But his latest movie is also like, he filmed with like in Korea, like it's a Korean story that he films. Yeah. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, there's like this, not that two people is a movement, but that's two prominent directors anyway. Like,
yeah,
it certainly seems like there's starting to become more crossover.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's like, there's not a lot of crossover. So like Korean directors don't do Japanese movies and vice versa.
Generally not. I do wonder if you're a Jap, so the Japanese industry is particularly closed in terms of like, it's hard, for example, like it's hard for American companies to even get the rights to do remakes, not because they can't figure it out, but because they go to the company and they're like, hey, we want to give you money to let us remake your show or movie. And they just say, oh, no, thanks. Yeah. Because they're not interested. Like, they don't care about the wider market.
Yeah, it's not really in their business model. Yeah.
But the Korean market is obviously much more global, and like both because they have all these hits coming out. So if you're a Japanese director who wants to break out of basically the festival circuit, which is kind of the only way you get noticed, maybe working in Korea is another way to do it.
And certainly their television market, the way those shows are getting picked up, because at first it was like really Netflix was the one who would take them global, at least from like a US standpoint, like it's how they would come here, but then Netflix was also platforming them, you know, globally.
Right.
But now, yeah, we're seeing Disney's getting in on it. Apple TV was, Dr. Brain went to Apple TV. Mm-hmm. So you're getting, yeah, I mean, like there are so many companies, US companies that are picking up these programs out of Korea. Like, they're doing great. So yeah, I mean, that is a lot of it. Like if you're looking for that kind of exposure, like if you can get the job in Korea, it can then go out from there.
Right.
So
I don't understand this closed Japanese system. Why are they not like seeking a huge profit?
I don't even know if profit is the question. I mean, I always learned it a bit more from a, and it's changed, but like the Japanese or the Chinese market was similar, like a very kind of anti-Western for a long time, where it was just kind of, we're doing things for our people.
Right. Right.
And that's it. And actually,
there were
like,
enough people there to support that.
But Japan. But even there, it's like you had people like in like the 80s and 90s, movies would get banned in China if the director managed to get them picked up at the Cannes Film Festival. Like, it was even more extreme. Like, you know, like, Dan, you were saying, like, with Japanese movies, it's kind of the festival circuit is the only way people would get to see them elsewhere.
Right.
China was so extreme. It was like, oh, no, if you got it into a festival, your movie was now banned here because that's literally not what we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the Chinese market, I have a very limited understanding of all of this, but the Chinese market, it's definitely more of a, they're trying to limit the cultural influence, I think, both importing and exporting, or at least,
and that's loosening definitely up importing. Now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's,
but they still have a cap on how many foreign movies can screen in theaters,
and it's like balanced to how many of their own movies
But yeah, the Japanese system, my understanding of it is just that because they're still kind of in essentially a studio system, like the way that Hollywood used to be, like pre the 50s, like pre the breakup of the studio. So it's all so controlled and like so top down. Like, you know, actors would often be like, I don't know if it's still like this,
contracted to,
you're a contract player to a studio. So you end up in six different shows that are all just the same studio. I don't know if it's just because of the way that their system structured or if it's just, you know, for whatever reason, they haven't, I think it's starting to loosen up again because of Netflix and other companies coming in, but it's taken a long time, I think.
But is it also, I mean, so in China, it was more like, well, we don't want the influence back and forth. But in Japan, it's just sort of like, we literally don't care. Like, we don't want your money to remake this because, like your market doesn't matter to us.
Like, yeah, it feels almost like it was an indifference.
Yeah, just like, yeah, anything outside of this, like this, and which kind of goes along with that old Hollywood thing. It's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. When it was the 40s or 50s and you had these studios who controlled everything, like, no, they wouldn't really care about what was happening in other territories. And like, they wouldn't really bother with the meetings or whatever. Just that doesn't matter. So
we're not going to have like a Japanese Squid Games crossover hit anytime soon.
Well, you already have the Japanese Squid Game and it's called Alice in Borderland.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Coming back season two this week, actually. No, there are obviously some big hits that have come out of Japan, but again, so far they've only been Netflix.
Yeah.
Like Alice in Borderland, which obviously wasn't as big, but.
But is that even is that a Netflix acquisition or were they able to throw up money for the production?
I believe they actually put up money for that.
Okay.
Before it was canceled, Terrace House became kind of a big hit here.
Yeah.
It's reality, but still, but yeah, I don't know.
That's all very fascinating. And we don't, just stuff I didn't know.
Anyway, watch Connect.
All right.
Connect. Board this holiday.
Yeah, it's on Hulu, not Disney Plus.
Not on Disney. It will not be there.
But Disney Plus probably everywhere else. Right. We only have a couple minutes left before we run out of time, but. We should briefly touch on Mythic Quest. I feel like
it was so good.
Dustin,
their standalone
did you watch
episodes.
I did watch it. Yes.
Okay. Did you hate it? Did you hate how it destroy the narrative momentum, Dustin? Yeah.
Not at all. Why am I going to get you something?
Your black heart, unmoved
beautiful
by.
Episodes.
I'm the sentimental guy. What the hell?
I cried. The Sarayan reveal that's what she was playing.
Yeah.
That hit me. I was like, but yeah, so it's a standalone episode. It was episode 6 this season, right?
I believe so.
7, I think.
7? No, 7. Yeah, it does.
Okay, 7. So yeah, they go back to Ian and Poppy's childhoods and kind of run through these like pivotal times where they're both the same age, but obviously different years because Ian's older than Poppy.
Right.
And so you see their childhood, and for Ian, it's like he's has a really hard time focusing. His mind, you know, he can't he just doesn't learn the way other kids do. And his mother is also, I think, manic depressive or something's kind of going on. So she's trying really hard to support him, but she also has these down moments where she's not really able to take care of him. And, there's kind of a custody battle with her, ex-husband or with his father.
Right.
And who is played by, it was Sam Witwer, right?
It was Sam Witwer.
Yeah.
For one scene.
For one scene, but that bone structure, I was like, dang. Yeah.
Which made me wonder if they're going to bring him, if they're going to bring him back.
But like he wouldn't, how could you bring, would we just do old man makeup? Like,
age him up, sure. Age him up. Or just have him look the same, who cares?
When they did the remake of
Being Human.
Being Human, yeah. He was the vampire. Oh. He was the Aiden Turner character.
Yeah.
All right.
But he does a lot of like, Star Wars. You've seen
Sam Witwer.
Yeah.
And stuff.
The bone structure.
I
didn't recognize him.
But yeah, so that's Ian's story. But the whole thing is like one of the things that he starts doing is...
We're going to keep going. I'm just saying.
He imagines this plan. He's supposed to do a planetary report and he imagines a planet. He's supposed to do Saturn or something. And he decides to come up with his own planet and he calls it Sarion because his mother's name is Sarah. So combines it. Very touching. Poppy, on the other hand, is, she's literally nothing has changed. Poppy is exactly who she is.
Right.
But she's in a household where they want her to be normal. And so they're making her do piano recitals and, all this stuff. And she just wants to play Final Fantasy, which I was like, oh my girl. Yeah.
I was a little offended that she is a child and she's playing Final Fantasy IX.
IX, I know.
And I'm like, excuse me, that is not that long ago.
It was that long. I'm like, oh, I'm the one who's old. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. But Poppy's kind of great. So she kind of realizes that, she doesn't have any friends, and which is a through line this season, like her struggle with friendship or what having friends means. And so she realizes that her parents just kind of worry about her. So she does this great, she knocks the piano recital out of the park, uses it to get her parents to buy her a bicycle, which gets them off her back. Cause she's like, it's a normal child thing to do.
She's outside.
That's all her mom wanted. And then she rides her bike to the library where she can use the internet and look up game guides. And and that's where she discovers Ian's game, which at that point he has now started developing games. He makes one called Sir Ian. That's a planetary game. And so that is what inspires her to learn game design. And then it's like them meeting later at school where he's a lecturer. And it's, their first meeting. And it's perfect.
An absurd beard.
It's so
we know he was a lecturer before.
I think he was a guest lecturer.
All we knew was that he had found her when she was in college, and that's when he hired her. So this is just the moment when they meet, I guess.
Yeah. So I think that's one of those where you're not. Sometimes they don't really. It's not like you're a professor, but you're a professional in the field, and they bring you in.
It's basically the start of *Halt and Catch Fire*, Dustin. Except they don't sleep together.
Yeah. But it's so, it was also, even that meeting was so cute because it's her kind of going, and then I realized, the design was trash. And he's just kind of like she is not impressing him, but she's so interested in, so genuinely interested in his games and his ego. They played so well off of each other.
Yeah. My favorite moment in that sequence was actually when he's weirded out and he's like, I'm gonna go, and she's like, okay, I'll follow you. And he's like,
yeah,
all right, I guess. Like,
yeah.
So
yeah,
it was also kind of nice to see so Ian's story is obviously tragic, but Poppy's
taken away from his mother,
right? But Poppy comes from kind of a normal home. And she's just kind of like, even the fact that like she's constantly treated as like, oh, she's so weird and like antisocial, blah. She's basically just like a kid who like wants to just stay home and play video games.
Yeah.
Which like today is very normal.
Yeah. But
I guess back then,
at the time,
was considered, oh no, she'll never make friends. Although it turns out they're right because she has trouble making
friends. She never. But they also, they didn't have they didn't have internet at that point, or they were right. avoiding installing it because they were worried about the impact it would have on her. Right. And yeah, I think it's also interesting because the season she's made, like around the Christmas episode where it was like, do you have plans or whatever? And it's like, well, my parents are going here, but you know, I'm not. And it's like, well, did they invite you or did mm-hmm. you choose not to go? Why aren't you going? Like there's always this friction, and it's hard to tell how much of it is her, like not her lying or her genuinely not understanding.
Right.
The connection that's going on with her family.
I have a terrible thing that just popped in my brain. I think I have to say it. So
you've done this before and you were right. I think,
oh. I hope I'm not right. But so in season two, she talks about her dad singing a song.
Yeah.
And here the bond is between them.
Yeah.
I think he's dead. Oh, no. I think he's dead. And we don't know.
Damn it, Dan.
Sorry.
And so she's avoiding seeing her family because he's not there? Or maybe. She doesn't know.
Or she no, she knows. But like, I think it could be that, like, you know, he's the one person who got her.
Yeah. So. And tried to cover for her, and yeah.
Right.
Anyway, it was very,
way to bring
very
down
sweet.
The mood, Dan. Last full show of the year.
It's a really good show.
It is. It is.
People, and it's always the standalone episodes, man. Like, they come out of nowhere, and you're like, I don't know why this is important. And by the end of it, you're like, this show would be nothing without these episodes. Like, they're just, they do so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Every standalone episode's great. Including last year's Dustin.
Wait, did I not like last year's? Because I know I loved the first year's. But
you
last year's
that,
I didn't.
You said it broke the narrative year's. Momentum. You didn't like the backstory
of
it. Oh, God.
I didn't like last year's because it was all about F. Murray Abraham's character. Yeah, I didn't care for last year's. But the first year's I loved.
Well, you know, no accounting for taste.
Yeah, some people are born to be villains, and that's okay.
So this year, you were happy with it?
Yes, I thought it was great, and I had even forgotten my complaints last year because I liked it so much.
I think we did it. We talked about all the shows.
We talked about all the shows. We just barely, just only slightly ran over, and we'll. We're definitely not recording another mini episode right after this, so don't worry about it. Anyway, so that being said, there will be two mini episodes over the holidays while we take a break and people go on, I don't know, vacation or whatever they're doing. Yeah.
Eat.
I don't know what you guys do. I don't know what you guys do for the holidays. And I don't ask questions.
Get
so
cats.
It's fine.
We're open books.
You can ask us questions, Dan.
The less we all know about each other, the better.
Is that
for
true?
Plausible deniability in the event that someone comes asking questions. Not CIA
not
related.
Not the CIA? Oh, really?
Not CIA related.
No, are you sure?
But no.
Seriously,
but
yeah.
Do you think they monitor, like, even podcasts? Like, do they know that there's a podcast that just mentions them every week? Like, are we on government watch lists for this?
The sad thing is that if that were true, then the poor agent who has to screen it is just like, well, here we go. Another hour of my life gone.
1.75 speed.
But anyway,
we'd never know.
Yeah. But we will, so there will be content the next couple weeks, but our next full episode will be next year in 2023, which can't be right because
it is right.
That doesn't seem right.
We'll see. We'll see.
2023 sounds right. Being 23 years from the year 2000 does not sound right.
I will turn 40 years old in the year 2023.
Hmm.
That also doesn't sound right.
No.
Finally joining us, Tori.
I mean, you know, unenthusiastically, but okay. I guess I'll be 40, I suppose.
All right. Well, that's the show. We'll be back. We will be back next week, but we have already recorded that. Shh, don't tell anyone.
We'll see you next year.
We'll see you next year.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Happy holidays.